Right, hello everybody and welcome back to the Coach's Corner. I'm your host Matt Fryer and today we've got a great show in place for you. We're going to be joined by a putting coach by the name of Lee Sullivan. You may have heard of his boss, that being Phil Kenyon, one of the coaches to the stars of the golfing world at the moment, really taking off with his career, Phil, over the last 4 or 5 years and taught, you know, major champions, world number ones, really great players. And Lee's been lucky enough to be coaching under him now for nearly 4 years and getting all the knowledge from him, getting a great insight towards some of the game's best people in the putting space, and getting loads of information from Phil and Mike, one of the other coaches as well, Mike Kansky. So it's going to be great to hear what Lee has to say today. So without further ado, let's bring Lee into the show. Right, Lee, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, Matt. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. How are you finding all this at the moment with us being stuck inside?
Yeah, it's certainly, obviously no one's ever been, not many people have been through what we're going through. So as we keep hearing, it's certainly unprecedented. Mm. And there's certainly a lot of, you find yourself having a lot more time to reflect on life in general and maybe, you know, what you do for a career also.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. So talking about careers, for the viewers at home, well, the listeners at home, what tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your background? How did you get to become a putting coach?
Yeah, so like most people, I started golf kind of in my early teens. You know, some people may think that's kind of like coming to golf. Mm. No family members played golf. I literally had, there was a couple of older lads who lived in my street back at home growing up in Liverpool. And I used to see them walking past my house with a plastic bag full of golf balls and a club each.
Right.
And they literally just used to walk a 5 minute walk to the local school field. And they used to just hit balls on the school field.
Brilliant.
So, I went with them one time and I just got, and that was it. I just got hooked. I hit a ball. Sounds a bit like a Seve story, but I did have an old Spalding 3-iron.
out of the bunkers.
Well, not quite, but I remember hitting it out the middle and it was just an amazing feeling. And I just wanted to do it again. And that's how I got into it, really.
Yeah, a lot of people find that, like my dad's a pro, obviously, and I didn't take up till late, and it was the similar sort of feeling. Went to the range my dad worked at and hit a few balls and got a few out of the middle, and it was like, God, what is this? Like, I need more of it. I need to do it, and I was just hooked from there and then.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Same with me.
So from then, played amateur, was your sort of a successful amateur career, or was it just good local amateur and then turning pro pretty quickly, or where did you go from there?
Yeah, no, I didn't play to a high standard as an amateur. I mainly played club stuff and regional stuff. I never played for the county or anything like that. I probably didn't push myself towards that direction. Looking back now, I definitely should have.
Yeah.
But I didn't know much about it. I didn't know much about that pathway.
Yeah.
So I just played my golf around the golf club, scratch matches, and some local events, amateur events, you know, kind of Northern Order of Merit was going then in the Northwest.
Yeah.
So played a few of those events. But that was about it, really.
And then decided it was something you wanted to do as a job. And were you, like most of us who, you know, played the amateur stuff, were you wanting to go into the playing side of things, or was it before turning professional you knew that you wanted to become a coach? How did that come about?
I think I was more looking at coaching. I knew I wasn't good enough to be a player. I knew I couldn't earn a living playing. You know, I was realistic about the ability I had. Mm. And speaking to the assistants at my golf club at the time, you know, I found out about the PGA and becoming a PGA professional, going through some training. at a golf club and be getting qualified, and then you could start coaching. So that was my pathway, really.
Excellent. And was it something where, as you took your pathway being a PGA professional, was it you always focused on putting? How did the putting bit come about? Because I know you were a head pro after you qualified. Was it always an aim to go into the putting space, or was it just to be a pro to start off with, do the head pro's role, and then you got into that? How, basically?
No, I kind of started, I got qualified, and you know, I was excited to be qualified, and I was assistant at the golf club where I did become the head pro at.
Right.
But it was golf swing. I went down the route of golf swing.
Yeah.
And I think over the years, people, you know, you'd give the standard weekly lessons, half hour lessons. I didn't see people improving. Someone would have a lesson 1 week, and then the next week, you know, they may have been busy with life in between in that week, so they didn't have time to do any practice. So people weren't progressing as quickly as I thought maybe they could. So on reflection, you know, I thought, no one looks at the putting. No one ever asks me for a putting lesson. It's all like, can you help me with my driver?
Driver, yeah, number one.
Can you help me hit woods off fairways and long irons and stuff? You know, the real kind of juicy stuff, which is, you know, really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly,
for at any level to be consistent with those longer clubs. Mm-hmm. So I actually just off my own back and my own thinking, I thought, you know, could I start helping people with the putting? And that's kind of how I kind of went down that route.
Excellent. Yeah, it's definitely, like you say, whenever, you know, me working at the academy at the range, and it's always woods, drivers. And for me, sometimes it's people almost think that, you know, a good putter, because they don't, you know, fat it or top it or things like that. So the mistakes they're making, or, you know, the tendencies they have to not hold putts, aren't as apparent to them, because it's not as a drastically bad shot, as it were, when you've sliced one out of bounds and hit someone's house. You know, just just missing a 3-footer doesn't seem as drastic. So it is something that, you know, I noticed definitely. And when you get people to get the putter in the hand, you think, well, you know, straight away you could save, you know, 5-6 shots here.
Yeah. Through. I think there's a lot of comparisons to tour players when it comes to golf swing. And I always think, you know, when somebody's comparing a swing to a tour player, you know, that the amateurs, you know, can they even move, or have they got the speed, you know? So but I always look at putting and think, you could actually do that when it comes to putting, because it's a non-dynamic kind of movement.
Yeah.
You know, so there's no reason why you can't get into certain kind of good positions in setup and improve your putting and get closer to a tour player's performance.
100%, yeah. Like you say, you don't really need the physical attributes. And that leads me nicely on to one of my first questions. And what do you see from the pros to the amateurs that really separates them in their putting performance? I did see that Phil did something about perception the other day on his Instagram that I found really interesting. But from your take, what's really separating the amateurs putting to the pros putting?
Yeah, I would always look at the three kind of skills that you need to hold put to become a good putter. So I would always look at an amateur's ability to start the ball on their intended line.
Yeah.
Speed control's massive. I don't think they appreciate what they have to do to become more skillful when it comes to speed.
Yeah.
And also green reading. You know, not a lot of amateurs, I would say a high percentage of amateurs, don't really have any concepts, good concepts or any strategies for green reading.
Yeah, it's just sort of hang the putter up in the air and
I saw
my mate do it, so it should work. I don't know really what I'm looking for, but
yeah,
let's hope it works out. And how would you get an amateur better in those three skills then?
Well, I think first of all, I think questioning would be really important. Asking a lot of questions before you start to, you know, try and find out what patterns that person's got. So you kind of delve in with some questions. Hopefully they give you some decent answers, and you can start to, in your mind, kind of appreciate maybe how they go about trying to hold puts.
Yeah.
So first thing you could do is you could set them a little test on start line, maybe using a gate.
Right.
And then they could give you feedback as to how successful they were on rolling the ball through the gate.
And would the success be how they see it? And obviously hitting it through the gate is, you know, one of the big giveaways, but where it looks to them and things like that?
Yeah, they could start, you know, you could then start to ask questions if you're like with them one-to-one. You could then start to work out, you know, where they weren't successful in getting the ball through the gate. Is there a consistent side of the gate they tend to hit?
Yeah.
So that could give you some, that was going to give you some feedback on the face, the angle of the face at impact.
Yeah.
But also you could then start to ask questions and try and discover how they see the put. Some people, you know, there's some good concepts out there that would look at linear and non-linear putters.
Right.
So that would be, some people maybe very strong attentional cues when it comes to straight lines.
Yeah.
And then some players would see more attentional cues into the path that the ball would take, so the way it would curve along across some slope.
Yeah, definitely. I think I would fall into that category, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, whenever I vision a putt, almost see a channel towards the end of the hole, sort of the last 3 feet, as long as I can get it into this sort of like pattern I see it as a little bit, as long as I can feed it into there, I feel like I can just get the ball going towards that, then I'm okay.
Yeah. You could still use the gate in both of those kind of scenarios, whether somebody sees more of a curve or a line. That could still help you to find out, you know, what they do or how they see things.
Yeah. And technique-wise, obviously, we alluded to the tour pros and people swinging and not being able to, you know, get it as good as them sometimes because of the attributes they have. Looking at sort of technique of a putter, do you think mindset comes into it a lot? Sort of we hear of like Tiger willing the ball into the hole and maybe not having the best technique sometimes, but actually, you know, holding a lot of putts. Does it have to be technically sound, or is it knowing more what your stroke does to allow for those tendencies then?
I think certainly knowing what your stroke does, what patterns it produces, is certainly a benefit. I mean, obviously there's a big mental aspect when it comes to most things, isn't there? How well or how poorly you may do something or approach something. I mean, I've got no qualifications or no experience, just your own kind of experience when it comes to how you may think about things. But it's that's another area of, you know, the mental side, which is massively untapped, isn't it?
Definitely. We're starting to see these, like yourself, Phil, Mike, you know, specializing in putting. We're seeing a lot of coaches specializing in mental training and also the sort of being game ready, i.e. you know, Dave Aldred with Molinari and working with Luke Donald in the past. And would that be something you advise a lot of amateurs to do, sort of test themselves on the putting green, get them, you know, doing drills that give them feedback and put some pressure on instead of just, you know, whacking balls willy-nilly around the holes before they go out? Would it be do some drills, get some feedback?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if you're holding putts, then your confidence levels go up, don't they? So mentally, you're feeling strong and you're feeling much better about, you know, the skill of trying to hold a putt. Now, you can measure that, and you can, you know, deposit that confidence, if you like, into that confidence account by successfully doing drills and getting high consistency or high results doing those drills. So yeah, drills are a massive part of measuring your skill and measuring, you know, if you're improving that skill.
Excellent. What misconceptions would you see from amateurs when we look at putting? Is there, you know, one big standout flaw that a lot of amateurs have, i.e., you know, from my side of coaching, when I see someone who's slicing the driver as a right-hander, we'll normally see them aiming 50 yards left of the fairway and then compounding the problem. Is there anything that sort of crosses over into the putting space there that you tend to notice quite a lot with amateurs?
There's definitely a few. There's a handful of misconceptions when it comes to putting. The one that comes to mind for me is how amateurs read putts.
Okay.
I think consistently they underread putts. They underappreciate how much a putt is, or how much the ball's going to move across slope.
Mm.
So what they'll tend to do, they'll either, if they underread a putt, they'll end up trying to increase the speed so it holds the line.
Hmm.
And then, you know, consequently, if the ball goes past, maybe on the next green, they'll then just kind of respond to that previous green and they'll under hit it
and underread it.
Yeah. So I would say amateurs don't allow enough break. They don't appreciate how much break they need to allow on most putts, really. And then what they just alter, then they just spend maybe 9 holes or 18 holes just trying to control the speed.
Right, okay, instead of actually working on the break. And how would you suggest an amateur goes to improve his green reading? Is it just is there a science behind it? Is there, you know, a skill? Is it something that just comes with time? Obviously, you know, the likes of aim point and things have come about now. So is that something that you suggest to players?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend all amateurs, if they haven't done already, to take an aim point class, you know, with an aim point instructor.
Yeah.
That would really open their eyes and allow them then to appreciate just how much break they can be faced with over all putts, really.
Yeah, definitely. It is one that I see a lot where people, you just think, where are you aiming here to start? There's not even got a chance of going in when you're playing with some people. So is there anything else out there other than aim point that's a good system for people to be looking at, or would that be the one that you've seen your best results with?
Yeah, I would be a system that we would recommend. I mean, we're all aim point kind of instructors, so we've gone through the process of going through the certification with aim point themselves. So I would certainly look at that one to start with. But it's not the only thing that you could try and do as an amateur. It's not for everyone.
Yeah.
But I would certainly, if you've not had an aim point class, I would certainly take one with a certified instructor.
Yeah. To get your knowledge up on it. And what sort of drills would you work on with reading greens? Is there any sort of go-to easy little things that people can do to improve the putting, to help them with reading a green?
Yeah, I would probably look at something called targeting with an amateur.
Right.
So without going through the whole process, I would ask an amateur, I would give them a hole to hit to.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's 10, 15 feet.
Yeah.
So you've got your ball, you've got your hole. And then I would start to ask questions that they may have not thought about before. Maybe get them to place a second ball two thirds along the path of the putt.
Yeah, to see where it starts moving.
Put the ball down at that point. Ask them then to come back to the ball and take the setup, and ask them to get a sense of, you know, is that ball, is it high enough? Are you confident that's where the ball will roll through on its journey, yeah, on its path to the hole? And then they may start shifting the ball, and then they start to realize, well, actually, that feels like a lot further. Let's say we're talking about a left to right. You know, that feels too low. Okay, we'll move it further to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that feels better, but I would never, they start to say to themselves at first, wow, I would never aim that far left usually.
Yeah.
And then get them to hit putts, maybe through, you know, a couple of coins or a fake hole where that ball eventually finishes.
Yeah.
Where they've chosen, and see what the results are.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent. I think it's one that, you know, probably a lot of people don't work on, do they? You know, a lot of, like we said earlier in the conversation, everyone's keen to get driver out, keen to whack the fairway woods or just get straight out onto the courses, where, you know, if you look at all the amateurs who are getting good, and all the, especially the juniors around summer holiday time, you see them just for hours on end on the putting green with like the string out and, you know, some of the templates and things that you guys do, and yeah, they're working on building these skills, aren't they? At the end of the day, it is a skill to do this. And if we, yeah, can put a little bit of science into it as well and marry those two things up, you're going to become a better player and a better putter.
Yeah, I just lost you there for a minute. You're back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like you say, or like you've touched on there, I think a lot of amateurs don't practice the putting, and this is what they tell us, because they would practice it more, but they're not sure what to practice.
Mm. Yeah, so if they've got the right things, then they're going to be working on, you know, getting those skills in. Moving on to another topic that hopefully you might be able to cure everybody with an answer here, or give us some insights. The yips. How many times have you had a man or a lady walk through your door thinking they have the yips, and have they had it, and how have you gone about trying to help them, you know, get through that torrid time?
Yeah, had all scenarios, really. Somebody that comes for a lesson who actually doesn't know that they've got the yips, and they have.
Oh, right.
Or they've got some kind of yip.
Mm.
Some people that say they've got the yips and they haven't.
Yeah.
It's not obvious that they have. And then some people that kind of say they've got the yips and they absolutely have.
Yeah.
So we get them all from time to time. You know, it's, sometimes you don't see anyone with the yips for months, and then the next week you get three in a week.
Really, really stressful week, that one.
Not as stressful as you may think, really. a lot of enjoyable sessions, probably the most enjoyable sessions, are when somebody comes with a yip and you're able to help them manage the yip.
Yeah.
You know, and an hour, 1 or 2 hours later, they're walking away and they just feel, you know, you go back to that mental side, they just feel the confidence levels are kind of right up there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. They are always the most rewarding ones, where you see the biggest change and the enjoyment and the, you know, the satisfaction of them getting that ball in the air, or like you say, you know, the yip being cured. And what tends to be the, is there a common fault for them? Is it a mental thing, or is it something that's physical?
In my opinion, it's mentally driven, because, you know, the mental side, obviously your brain moves your body, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to send signals to your body to move.
Yeah.
So the confident, you know, the mental sides, I would the driver. There's been a lot of studies done on the yips, you know, also in other sports like snooker, darts, people that can't release the dart or release the cue through the cue ball. So not just putting. But I think the first thing to do is decide where the yip's coming from, or basically it's an involuntary movement of a part of your body.
Yeah.
If somebody's right hand dominant, so a right hand player, for example, you know, 99.9% the involuntary movement's coming from the right arm.
Yeah.
You know, wrist and hand.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can isolate that hand more and maybe come up with a way to hold the putter where it isolates and reduces that involuntary movement, then you're going to give that player more control when it comes to the putter face around about impact.
Yeah.
Because it tends to happen, from my experience, the involuntary movement tends to happen roundabout impact. It's as if they know that
split
when they
second, yeah,
it's the feel of ball and putter when it happens. It doesn't happen, doesn't tend to happen in the takeaway or the backswing or the first part of the downswing. It tends to be roundabout that impact.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen that. Even you watch people with a really, really solid practice stroke. Looks great, tempo's nice, you know, there's a flow to the putter, then they put it in, and then it's as they actually get to that impact point, it's like, whoa, what happened there?
Yeah, it's like a shock, isn't it? Shockwave.
Yeah, it's interesting. So isolating and altering the grip to get them more control would be the main way to go about it.
It would, yeah. From my experience at this moment in time, yeah. I mean, I'd love to know a lot more about it, and you know, maybe if you could, even if it would be possible, you know, I think you'd need a lot more time with a player.
Yeah.
You know, where you didn't actually have to change the way they hold it too much, and then you know, you could give them that control.
Yeah.
But that's, I think you've got to spend a lot of time with someone to do that, from my experience.
Yeah, definitely. It's not just going to be, it's like someone, I get someone with a wedge and they have the same sort of thing. It's not just a half an hour fix. Off you go, right, you're cured. It seems to be a month, you know, a couple of months of really, almost like counselling sometimes it feels like, because you got to talk them through it and build the confidence back up. And when they dip, you've got to, you know, reassure them that it's going to be okay, and it's not it's not instant gratification that, you know, so many people want nowadays.
Yeah.
It is a process.
Yeah, just like you alluded to there, Matt, people have, there's a lot of baggage that comes with the yips, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and it's built up over, a lot of the time, it's built up over years, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's that scar tissue from, you know, putts missed under pressure to win something, or, you know, a great score that they could have had, they missed it, and then it, you know, starts to settle and builds and builds and builds until ultimately that yip comes out.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's definitely what I've found with people.
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, going back to you talked about how important drills are, I think if you've given them some fix with that dominant hand where the involuntary movement's coming from, then maybe you can layer on top of that some drills to then give them some confidence from good results from those drills, and then you're building up that mental confidence again, aren't you, for the person?
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
You know, and we know it's different doing it at home and then transferring it even just onto the practice putting green and then transferring onto the golf course and then transferring it with it when the next time they've got a card in the hand. You know, that's going to take time, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It is that process. But like you say, it's that starting point, even if it is, you know, on one of the putting mats at home, and just cementing that little bit of confidence, you know, the old proof's in the pudding. If you've done it once, then you can start to build on it and keep doing it and doing it again. And, you know, it's just like you say, that understanding that it's going to be a bit of a test when you get out onto the putting green, then onto the course, then with the card. But, you know, it doesn't, if it was that easy to fix, no one would have the yips. Correct. At the end of the day. So, yeah, moving on to a more light-hearted topic then. So, obviously, you work under the guidance of Phil Kenyon, one of the great putting coaches, probably the forefront of putting at the moment on tour, definitely, and seeing lots of great stuff from him. And you have the Vizio training aids. With your background as the engineer side of building putters, do you get much impact in, you know, new training aids that are built? There was that one that you showed me last time we were at the studio. I don't know whether you've launched that yet or not, but that was a fantastic tool. So do you and Phil sort of come together with Mike as well on those?
Yeah, I mean, listen, there was a time where I worked for somebody who was an engineer by trade. I've got no engineering background at all, absolutely at all. but like we all do, you come up with ideas, don't you, between, you know, yourself and as a group. And, Phil's the driver, really. Phil's got a lot of great ideas, and obviously he runs that past, you know, myself and Mike, our other colleague, and we've got other colleague Dave in the States at our studio at Sea Island.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have a WhatsApp group and we're always discussing ideas. Ideas, it's a progression, isn't it? They can come from, some of the best ideas I that come to me is just standing in the shower.
Yeah, definitely. Just letting your mind wander.
Yeah, as soon as I've dried, and I'm like, yeah, I've got. Oh, I need to make a note of that. Come out. The brush my teeth. You know, dry myself off, and I've forgotten about it.
Gone.
But going, you know, in all seriousness, I mean, Phil's got some great ideas, and you know, most of those training aids have really been driven by Phil's ideas and experiences, coaching on tour, and you know, kind of just being at the coalface, really.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, there's a lot to be said nowadays. There's a lot of scientists out there, definitely in golf, and we see, you know, people almost trying to prove their worth and their knowledge sometimes on the online things. But being there, doing the job, being in front of the people is probably more what it's about, and obviously is giving birth to, you know, these great aids. For me, the Vizio, my putting template, when I show that to a student and show them the arc, they're almost mind blown. Oh, like the putter moves on an arc. I didn't know that. I thought it was a straight line. It's amazing how just something so simple, a little mat, can transform so many people's putting games.
Yeah, and when Phil designed that before my time, that was never designed with the intention of selling as a product.
I've got one of the originals.
Have you?
Yeah, from when he was at Formby.
Yeah, that was designed to simply help some of his players appreciate, just like you said there, when you showed it to your students, it just helps them appreciate actually, you know, how the putter moves, you know, in that kind of 3D path. So, you know, you've got face angle, path, strike. You know, that just helps someone appreciate and gives them a good concept for, you know, maybe how they should be moving the putter.
Yeah. They all tie in nicely as well to those three skills that you alluded to earlier, the starting line, your read, your speed. You've got something for everything, you know, there, haven't you, with those aids?
Yeah, and now obviously, you know, it is a business, and you know, I help manage that business as part of my, you know, my weekly kind of work, if you like. We've definitely got that in mind. All the three skills are always in mind when we're thinking about developing new training aids.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So what does your week in work look like?
Nothing at the moment.
Just chilling, riding your bike.
Deciding which cargo shorts to put on.
Like it.
Yeah.
Do you spend much time with Phil then, or are you very much sort of your all own individual coaches? Obviously, he's out on tour. I know Mike Kansky's moving out on tour. Is that something that you're aiming to do in the future? Is that what you see for yourself?
Phil spends most of his time when he's coaching. He's out the country. Mike's traveling a lot more now. You know, I spend a lot more time at both studios that we have in the Northwest.
Yeah.
Listen, if I ever did anything in the future and went to a few events, then that's fine. But I don't. It doesn't keep me up at night thinking I have to be a coach on tour. You know, I get a massive amount of satisfaction coaching all levels of players in the studios, out on the practice putting green at Formby. You know, hopefully doing some stuff with county squads, the likes of Lancashire and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just kind of, you know, try and develop my craft, get better at the synthesis of information you're trying to pass over to students, and, you know, keep my head down, keep my nose clean, and wherever it takes me, let's see what happens, really.
Perfect. And yeah. And what have you, obviously you've learned a tremendous amount, you know, off your own back and from Phil and Mike. What other than, you know, putting technique, what have you taken away from working and being around these guys? What attributes do you see from them?
I think the thing that sticks in my mind with both spending time with Phil and Mike is the attention to detail, really.
Yeah.
You know, not just palming something that doesn't seem important to one side and maybe jumping in feet first and trying to change someone, which, you know, I've definitely done in the past. You know, I've given people too much stuff to work on.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to frighten people off, aren't you, doing that? Or you're potentially going to hurt them.
Mm.
So, you know, just taking your time, being thorough in your analysis, asking the right questions, pre-analysis, because that's going to help you build your analysis.
Mm.
And then deciding where you're going to start with that player. And, you know, looking at every detail, but obviously just giving them some simple information to start with. So it's really attention to detail.
Yeah. Actually not just jumping into it and trying to, right, I know what to do.
Yeah. There's no, I don't feel that you need to, I would say to other coaches, don't feel that you need to rush and fix everything all in one go, because, you know, the likelihood is you won't, and you're going to hurt that player.
Yeah.
You know, that's just talking. I don't care who you are. We've all done that at some stage. So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Just, you know, wanted to tell them everything, you know, and yeah. It's almost sort of prove yourself or prove the knowledge that you've got instead of just drip feeding and letting them just little nuggets to take away and work on one thing. And, oh, right, that works for me.
Yeah. And I would also say, if you've got the opportunity to sit in or be a fly on the wall with a top coach, like I'm sure you've had with your dad, obviously I know your dad.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I've been lucky in that respect and been around a lot of coaches. And when I used to work at Formby Hall just before Phil was going out on tour, it was when he had sort of Challenge Tour players and you're a pro. And I was having lessons off him at the time, but even on my lunch, I would just say, "Do you mind if I, you know, just watch?" And you just learn so much just being in and around the environment, just how they conduct themselves, you know, not just necessarily all about, you know, the technique of a putting stroke, but, you know, how they pass information on, how they gather the information, how they interact with the client. It's amazing.
It is amazing what you can learn, and I've probably learned the most when I've been watching a live lesson, and being offered, you know, being asked to interact within that lesson and ask your opinion, you know, that's massive as well. It's good for your confidence, as a coach when you're with your students. So yeah, definitely, if you've ever got the opportunity to do that, then yeah, definitely do it.
Have a day doing that, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah.
Excellent. Well, one more question for you. Little bit of a tricky one here for you. You might have to rack your brains, but if you were to hole one putt in history, which putt would it be?
Hole one putt in history?
Yeah, it could be, you know, Tiger's winning putt at last year's Masters. Is the one putt that always stands out in your mind that you think, my God, that was amazing, you know, the moment, what it meant, and the trickiness of the putt, sort of like Nicklaus at 16 at Augusta for his final Masters. Is the one putt that really stands out for you?
I think the one putt that stands out for me growing up was probably watching Nick Faldo win his first Open at Muirfield.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I thought Azinger was going to win that. And it was obviously that famous kind of 18 holes where he had 18 pars, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and he still had, you know, I think it was probably three or four feet at 18 to kind of clinch it, didn't he? I think it was a shot, wasn't it?
Yeah, one shot.
I think growing up, I mean, it was, you know, I'm the age I'm at, that was the era where I was growing up. So like Seve was a massive idol, like he was to a lot of people back then. And, you know, Nick Faldo was world number one. So
yeah,
I think I can remember sitting at home kind of watching that on that Sunday. And I just thought it was, you know, I just thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
That's where I thought I just want to be, you know, I wanted to be a tour player at that moment in time.
Yeah.
And I quickly fell off that route. But yeah, it was that. I mean, to win your first major, you know, to be a British golfer.
Oh yeah.
Especially in like, you know, he kind of embodied everything about British golf, didn't he, Nick Faldo?
Yeah, definitely. He was, even for me.
First major, yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. I can remember it now. Yeah.
Excellent. Glad I could bring back the memories there. Well, yeah,
thanks for that.
Thank you for your time there, Lee. It's been very interesting. Hopefully everyone will be able to pick some little snippets out of there and improve their games or improve their putting. Definitely. If people want to get in contact with you or follow you, where can they find you?
So they could find us all at haroldswashputting.co.uk. If they're interested in the training aids, they can head to visioputting.com.
Yeah.
So they can find out all the information. We're on social media as well, on Twitter, Instagram. We've got a few bits on YouTube as well. Not as many as you, Matt.
No.
Still trying to get our heads around that, yeah. But yeah, that's where they can find us, yeah.
Excellent. Definitely worth checking the guys out on all the Visio platforms. It is great stuff and will really help you out. Well, thanks for coming along. Stay safe, and hopefully when we're out of this lockdown, I'll come down and see you in the studio and you can go to town on my dodgy stroke.
Thanks, Matt. No, I appreciate you inviting me on today, and I wish you all the success with your podcast for the future. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you'll do a great job.
Cheers. Thanks, mate.
Okay, mate.
Speak soon.
Cheers, Matt.
Okay, so that was Lee Sullivan there. Really great insight to what makes a great putter there, and three skills that we should all be working on, taking those from Lee's advice. That speed, that starting line and the read of the green, if we can all start to improve on those, we should see that we're becoming better putters. Some other great advice there from Lee as well. Just a thoroughly, thoroughly great bloke and a really, really intelligent putting coach. And if you do get the chance to go and see Lee, I couldn't highly recommend it enough. He is fantastic. And like I say, do check him out on all the social media handles that he gave there at the end of the podcast. As always, guys, thanks for listening. Do remember to rate the podcast, leave a comment, and do follow us on all our other social media handles. That's at Matt Fryer Golf for all of them. Stay tuned. We've got plenty more to come, and we'll see you in the next podcast.